Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. One of the strengths of Tulsa's downtown is its vibrant community of Art Deco buildings and structures. In the 20s and 30s, a growing boomtown city with gambling oil barons at its heart, these new titans wanted buildings and memorials that reflected their generation and the newness of their wealth with the latest refined architecture. And it's been Tulsa's treasure ever since, even though we failed to recognize it for quite a while. Renowned architects Bruce Gaul, Francis Berry Byrne, Joseph Koeberling, and Leon Center came to Tulsa, created structures that draw architectural fans from everywhere to see buildings like the Philcade, the Boston Avenue Church, Riverside Studio, Christ the King, Will Rogers High School, and much more. Suzanne Fitzgerald Wallace, who has co-authored several books with her husband Michael, tells Tulsa's Art Deco story, along with photographer and former federal magistrate Sam Joyner, in their new book together, Art Deco Tulsa. It's published by the History Press. They join me today to talk about the book, and we'll have a signing this Saturday at Decopolis at 502 South Boston from 12:30 to 2:30. Suzanne Fitzgerald Wallace and Sam Joyner are my guests today. Suzanne and Sam, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, yeah. Glad to be here.
You know, when I was first seeing this book, I thought immediately of David Halpern's Tulsa Art Deco. And of course, this book is Art Deco Tulsa. What made you guys decide to write another book about our Art Deco heritage here in Tulsa?
Well, David Halpern's two versions of Tulsa Art Deco are beautiful, and I know David well, and talked to him before I started writing this book. This book is easier to transport. You can walk around.
Doesn't have to be on a coffee table,
no,
right?
No, it doesn't need to be on a coffee table. And there's a chart in the back of the book which lists all Art Deco buildings that have ever been built in Tulsa, along with the date they were built, the style of architecture, the architect, the status, whether it's still standing or not, and the address. So you can go to the back of the book, take out that chart, and put your own tour together.
So how do the two of you get together and decide to do this book?
We're good friends.
Yeah.
And we've enjoyed the art world and photography, and the opportunity arose, and I was incredibly honored that she selected me and gave me the opportunity to do the photography, after which we spent the next 2.5 to 3 years photographing, roaming through the streets of Tulsa, searching out Art Deco. So it's we ended up taking some 500 photographs, 140 of which have ended up in the book.
Now, people may be surprised if they just know you as, you know, the former federal magistrate here, that you've had the passion for photography for a long time.
I've been doing photography for over 30 years. I've participated in workshops around the nation, from Ansel Adams in Yosemite to Rockport, Maine, probably 20, 25 times. So it's sort of been used to the other side of the brain while I was a federal judge at the same time.
Right. Now, has photographing buildings been a part of what you do over the course of the years, and photographing Tulsa specifically?
You know, if you look at my work, it's amazing how I seem to go to architecture and interesting angles, demonstrations of architectural principles. But my work is probably 80% architectural, just out of that's where my eye goes.
Mm-hmm. Have you been photographing Tulsa for a long time? Or was this a chance to look at the city anew?
It was a chance to look at the city. It's amazing how many photographs you take when you're out of town, but when you're in town, you don't remember to concentrate on what's there, and it's certainly given me an incredible opportunity to see what is in Tulsa, the treasure that we have, these Art Deco images.
What struck you as perhaps something you've been seeing for years, but you'd never really looked at? Was there any moments like that?
So, yes. In fact, we'd go back. You know, we'd take photographs, then we'd go back and do a little more, do a little better, get a little deeper. As Wynn Bullock, a photographer, once said, take what more there is there. So, yeah, some of the best images in the book, and I think we did, have come from third or fourth time visits to particular sites. The one that comes to mind is the Pythian Building. You can photograph there all day and not get everything that is there to see.
You know, the Pythian building, because it's so short and sort of squat, I mean, you see it and you see the architectural detail of it, but you don't really, you have to really look at the building to really see it, I think.
Oh, yeah, and the camera helps. You know, you sit there and focus. You have to have a tripod to make it work well. Mm-hmm. So you spend time. And you spend time with an image, that's when it starts talking to you.
Yeah. Now, Suzanne, Sam mentioned this, that, you know, you approached him. You had obviously had the idea for doing the book. What was the idea of doing the book? Was just the idea of having a book that you could take with you, that you could give to guests from out of town, that sort of thing?
That was pretty much the inspiration. Steve Gerken did a book for History Press. Steve's a good friend of ours. He had recommended to History Press a book about Tulsa outlaws, maybe a book about Tulsa Art Deco. Mm-hmm. And I responded to that and sent in a proposal. And
there you go.
Got going.
Yeah. So what was the story you wanted to tell about Art Deco?
Mainly that it is, Tulsa has one of the highest densities of Art Deco of anywhere in the country. It draws visitors. If they know about it, they'll come from around the world. And it's just such a wonderful architectural form. And a lot of Tulsans don't realize where it is, what it is, or anything about it.
Yeah. So you sort of do a primer on Art Deco and the three distinct styles that are part mm-hmm. of it, zigzag, PWA, and streamline. So how do we tell the difference between the three?
Zigzag was the earliest form, the most decorative. It is in skyscrapers. That's what the whole point was to be very tall and vertical, very decorative.
It really owes somewhat to the French sort of origins
yes.
of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The International Exposition of Modern Creative and Industrial Art. There we go. Yes, in Paris. And that inspired Art Deco. Tulsa picked up on it right away. And
we were booming at that time.
Booming. Yeah. And so the city fathers picked right up on it. And they were, as I would refer to them as risk takers, and they hired architects who were risk takers, my favorite being Bruce Gough.
Well, who was very young at that time.
Very young. He was involved with Spotlight Theater, Boston Avenue Methodist Church. He and Ada Robinson worked on Boston Avenue Methodist Church when Bruce was in his early 20s.
Also did Christ the King. He also did a number of residences.
He worked on the Bishop's Bench at Christ the King. Uh-huh. Christ the King is Barry Byrne.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
She's got a whole chapter in there on Bruce Gough.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the issues with the Boston Avenue Church.
Well, of course, that's you do wade into the controversy over
yes.
whether it's Ada Robinson or Bruce Gough. And so what did you find out? Because, you know, there are people who believe each side of the story.
Yes. I read through a book by Mrs. C.C. Cole, and it was she and her husband who led the discussion of building a new church, and she suggested Ada Robinson, who then in turn sketched the church and suggested that her student, art student from Central High School, Bruce Gough, help her put the final plan into architectural form. They worked well together until later when Bruce Gough was putting together his credentials, so to speak, as an architect and said that he had designed the Boston Avenue Methodist Church. Ada Robinson responded and said, no, I designed the church, and that's where the controversy came from. I believe they worked together. And in reading Mrs. Cole's book, it's very obvious that they worked together. That was the whole point.
Yeah, and I think, what is it, an architecture registry is listed Ada Robinson as the designer, Bruce Gough as the
yes.
architect.
That's correct.
So there's really no controversy, is there?
There isn't. Bruce Gough's name doesn't appear anywhere in or around the church.
Well, that's true. That's perhaps the controversy.
Yes, yes.
Well, there's some beautiful photographs. When you take a building like Boston Avenue, there's so much you can capture. What were the things you wanted to capture, Sam?
Well, the more tight you get in on particular images, I sort of halfway through this project realized that I was trying to reveal Art Deco as an art form into itself. And so that causes you to zero in tighter, zoom in to get the images. But at Boston Avenue, it's my second favorite of all the Art Deco buildings. It's a little more restrained, maybe, in its use. On page 19 of the book, Suzanne describes or defines Art Deco as exuberant, elegant, beautiful. Splendor is a word that comes up quite a bit. So my goal as a photographer was to try to capture that elegance, exuberance for the purposes of the book. And you can do it well at Boston Avenue, but to me, the favorite building for me is the Pythian.
Is it the Pythian? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What stands out about it?
Well, it's the geometric design. I mean, it's the beauty of Art Deco comes from design work, geometric design, and Pythian is just full of that, enhanced by color as well. But you look at the work that's been done, and you just cannot imagine craftsmen that have the talent and ability to create those images. Same thing with the Philcade ceiling. Just amazing.
Now, a lot of people go into the Phil Tower. Probably less people go into the Philcade. Mm-hmm. Is that a mistake?
It's a mistake.
Yeah, it is a mistake. Part of our goal or part of our mission was to figure out what is and what is not. And the Philcade is incredibly so much is. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the Phil Tower, in spite of the ornamentation all over the ceiling, is not Art Deco.
It isn't?
No.
Why is that?
That's a good question that could take another session or two. I mean, people disagree. They argue about what's Art Deco, what's not. To me, the Art Deco comes from the design work overall. Whereas the ceiling of the Phil Tower, you know, has specific images placed in the ceiling, but I don't see much geographic design overall expressing the Art Deco image there.
Yeah. Of course, you have to remember, all these buildings probably went up within about 10 or 15 years, and there were probably all sorts of styles being used at the time in Tulsa. Even along Art Deco and
yes.
non-Art Deco buildings, because everything was being built at once.
Yes.
Because of the oil boom.
And one of my favorites is Riverside Studio or Spotlight Theater.
Yeah.
It was designed by Bruce Goff for Patty Adams Schreiner, a piano teacher. And I tell the story in the book about Bruce Goff designing that, Olinka Herdy designing the hangings, the murals that were on the wall, which have disappeared, all except one.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite, and it's along Riverside Drive, and it needs to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Herb Fritz, who I write about in the book, architect, put together a study for what needed to be done to refurbish the Spotlight Theater. He passed away, and unfortunately, the study has never seen fruition. But
I know the Spotlighters who run that, they would desperately love to do it, but of course, it requires a major fundraising drive.
And it's right along that part of the Riverside that goes from the Gathering Place down to the bridge. So
yeah, I think that's a matter of time before it is saved.
I agree.
What I love is that you do have some of the murals, that reproductions of the murals of Olinka Herdy, which is when you talk about the losses we have, here's a building that's still standing, but it still had a major loss because those were incredibly important. They were very much of the time.
Yes.
And
yes.
It would be like taking Chagall the windows out of the Metropolitan Opera House or something like that.
That's,
I mean,
right.
It really is a terrible loss.
Mm-hmm. It is.
My guest today is Suzanne Fitzgerald Wallace and Sam Joyner, who have collaborated on a new book titled Art Deco Tulsa. And it features a lot of photographs, but a lot of text about many of the places that Art Deco enthusiasts go to, some very familiar, the Warehouse Market, for example, the Spotlight Theater, a number of places, but also places that you might overlook. And of course, one of those is one of the true near losses that has actually come back, and that is the Tulsa Fire Alarm Building. Did you spend quite a bit of time at that building?
Yes. We did. Yes. Yeah, there's yeah. incredible detail.
So tell us
there.
The story of the Fire Alarm Building.
The Fire Alarm Building was important in early Tulsa because all of the fires that were reported had to go through the Fire Alarm Building. There was one operator or a number of operators, but everything needed to go through the Fire Alarm Building. And that was the case, I believe, until the 1960s, 70s,
okay.
for a long time. But it is a beautiful example.
Beautiful frieze work. Beautiful frieze work. And you have a wonderful photograph of just an example of the frieze work.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, it was derelict for a number of years and about ready to be destroyed.
That's right. And Herb Fritz, who I talk about and who I mentioned had pulled together the study of the Riverside Studio, he was really responsible for saving the Fire Alarm Building.
I'll talk a little bit about Herb Fritz because, you know, during the 60s, as we all know, right now, it's mid-century buildings that are sort of on the chopping block. We think of them as ugly, and that's the old, you know, America's all about getting rid of the old and putting in the new. And right now it's mid-century, but say in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was Art Deco that was considered old and stodgy
that's
and
right.
old-fashioned.
Right.
And we got rid of, unfortunately, a lot.
Goodness. The Halliburton Skaggs building downtown was a huge loss. That was taken down in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. It was taken down for Oklahoma Natural Gas to move into, then Citgo. And then it was taken down for Citgo. Citgo moved, so Oklahoma Natural Gas moved into the building. That was a replacement, the modern building, which then resulted in the old Oklahoma Natural Gas building being preserved. And
right.
it's still there on Main Street, I believe.
Right, right. It's at the
624.
Yeah, 624 Main.
This chart that she's put into this book is worth the price of the book just by itself. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazingly helpful.
Were there any new discoveries that you learned about Tulsa from researching this book about properties that you really had never thought of as being Art Deco or thought of in any way, whether for either of you?
Certainly, of course. No, there's lots of residential is an area in which we didn't get into too deeply that probably has, I mean, you mentioned David Halperin's book. This is an amazingly good complement to that book. It's not meant to be a coffee table book. It's academic. It's got lots of text with photography to complement the text and to entice the reader maybe to go on site. But they work very well together.
Was there any discoveries for you along
the way? Well, in terms of Art Deco in Tulsa coming back again, we have an echo of Deco happening. Myers, Durr, and Harley-Davidson on Peoria is one of the new Art Deco style buildings. And Sam and I went in and visited with Reba, and she explained why the building was designed the way it is. If you drive by, it's a very much Art Deco. And it used to be pink and green. They've repainted it, I think, brown and black. But that was a discovery.
That may have been a Harley decision
that
right there.
That was a Harley decision, I'm sure of it.
Well, you also, speaking of echoes of Deco, you talk a little bit about William Franklin, who has been creating Art Deco inspired art. He has the Decopolis where you'll be signing this weekend and really sort of pushing this Art Deco heritage to a new generation of audience.
William Franklin is a wonderful young man, and the cover of the book has a picture of the goddess of oil. And I tell the story in the book about William Franklin's grandmother posing for that maquette, and he will have the maquette down at the shop this Saturday at Decopolis, and you can read about that in the book.
I can add a detail. She not only posed, but she posed in the nude. which was a bit of a scandal on occasion. And as I recall, somebody was posted by the door.
Yes,
to,
yes, yes.
Well, nowadays, if we have an Art Deco building, they're generally preserved. Are there any buildings that are in danger at this particular time from the Art Deco era here in Tulsa?
Well, personally, I think the Spotlight Theater is in danger because it needs to be taken care of. It's a wonderful, wonderful structure, and it's by Bruce Goff, our greatest architect.
Yeah. Obviously, it's still a going concern with the Spotlighters, but again, they don't have the money to fix it up.
They don't have the money, but Art Deco draws people to Tulsa the way Route 66 draws people to Tulsa. And people will come from all over the world for those two sites or experiences here in Tulsa. And we need to guard and take care of everything that is Art Deco remaining because it is truly a treasure of Tulsa.
Yeah. It's a beautiful book, has beautiful photographs. Obviously, a lot of work gone into the photographs and the text and telling the story of a lot of homes and businesses. And that's the one thing is that we don't spend much time on are the businesses that are still going concerns.
Yes.
Like Phoenix Cleaners, a whole variety of businesses. There's a veterinarian clinic. There's all sorts of little businesses that are in these little Art Deco styled buildings. Do the owners, I'm sure you spoke to some of them during the course of making this book, are they aware of what they have?
I would imagine. We didn't get to speak to all of them, but I would hope that they are aware of what they have. The City Veterinary Clinic on Peoria is really a very good example of that. And do you remember?
Well, the Art Deco Museum is in the Philcade Building. And there's
the current museum, which is in there.
Create a better museum. I mean, the use of Art Deco was reasonably short-lived overall, but its roots go very, very deep. I mean, if you go back to the Greeks, what you find in Art Deco, the harmony, the proportion, the balance that the Greeks celebrated. If you want to go further back from that, in ancient Egypt, there's tons of zigzag everywhere. If you look at the Chrysler Tower in New York City, as Suzanne mentioned, I guess we share the distinction with cities named like Miami Beach, Los Angeles, New York City. So we need to be conscious of that.
Yeah. When you talk about the zigzag style, obviously the Pythian building's your favorite. Do each of you have favorites in the two other styles, which we really didn't talk about? PWA, everybody thinks of it as WPA, but the PWA was actually construction people building buildings. And that's what the style is in Art Deco, and then Streamline. So do you have favorites in each of those here in the city?
PWA, probably Tulsa Union Depot.
Of the Union Depot, uh-huh.
Streamline. Sam, do you
Streamline
have
Streamline is the vet clinic, is it not?
Does yes, the vet clinic is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good example of Streamline. I mean, the stuff that's more dramatic, the more eye-catching is the zigzag work. Early on.
And the Tulsa Monument Company.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
On
Route 66.
Route 66, excuse me, Suzanne. All right. Well, we wish you great success with the book. The book is, I guess, getting a good reaction already. You've had several signings here in the area.
Yes, we've had people attend signings. It's sold out on Amazon. They're going into a second printing. And we're just having a lot of fun with it.
Okay. Suzanne and I got to be very good friends over this 2.5 to 3 year process. Never a conflict, just camaraderie.
Well, that's
it's
great.
Been a blast.
Well, it's great. You can find the book this weekend when they'll be signing the book at Decapolis at 502 South Boston from 12:30 to 2:30 this Saturday. Suzanne and Sam, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Suzanne Fitzgerald Wallace is the author of, and Sam Joyner is the photographer for Art Deco Tulsa. It's published by the History Press. They'll be signing the book this Saturday from 12:30 to 2:30 at Decapolis at 502 South Boston in downtown Tulsa. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Mark Dara.
When a group of German brewers visited the U.S. in the early 1970s, one said, American beer is so bad, flies won't light on it. When Heineken, a real German beer, reached the U.S. market that same decade, it became an immediate bestseller. Not wanting to lose market share, Anheuser-Busch of St. Louis, Missouri, pushed its Michelob beer as an upscale competitor to the Deutschland threat. Soon, Michelob became an American market leader. That didn't happen by word of mouth. Anheuser-Busch spent enormous sums on advertising. It was rare to watch a sporting event or anything at all on television without seeing a Michelob commercial and hearing its distinctive jingle. Weekends were made for Michelob. When was the last time you heard of anyone drinking Michelob? More importantly, when was the last time you truly had a weekend? Maybe the popularity of Michelob evaporated when the weekend did. Gallup reports adults employed full-time in the U.S. now work on average 47 hours a week. Most U.S. employees fail to take all their allotted vacation pay. Many pass up the benefits of the Family Leave Act, and the availability of overtime pay for middle-class workers hasn't increased since the mid-1970s. Technology hasn't helped. Parents and bosses were the first and biggest fans of cell phones. Parents, because the devices help keep track of their children. Bosses, because the portable phone made their minions available 24/7. With immediate availability now an expected norm, the notion of a carefree weekend seems almost quaint. How many weekend texts, emails, and calls truly can't wait? How many merit the interruption? Anheuser-Busch didn't promote Michelob as an alcoholic beverage that made you belch, fat, and sloppy. Michelob promised a better life in one's own personal promised land. The middle-class fantasy of the 1970s featured a good job, good wages, a nice pension, longer weekends, and a shorter work week. The opposite occurred, because most American decision-makers didn't learn one of the major lessons of that decade. Jimmy Carter took office as president on January 27, 1977. A farmer, engineer, and small businessman, Carter began his days before daybreak and typically worked until 10 or 11 o'clock at night, 7 days a week for 4 years. President Carter's term is considered by many to be a failure. Ronald Reagan succeeded Carter in 1981. President Reagan usually slept until 8 a.m. and adjourned for the day in time for supper. He often napped in the afternoon and enjoyed watching movies with his wife and traveling to his California ranch. Reagan's term is considered by most to be a success. We have followed Jimmy Carter's pattern, not Ronald Reagan's, and I think we are less for it. Who knows what might change our compulsion to perpetual work? But some days, I can still hear the faint tune of that jingle, "Weekends were made for Michelob."
Commentator Mark Dara is a local attorney and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. His latest book of his essays is titled A Catalog of Common People. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.